I think I had a romanticized view of what adoption really looks like, right? Like it looks beautiful. Like it's just it is a picture of the gospel. And so I don't know if maybe that's kind of what drew me in as well. But I would just say it's just something that outside of like the Lord just putting that call in my heart, I don't really know.
Hey, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jennifer.
And we're the hosts of the Marriage After God podcast. Our desire is to help you cultivate a marriage that chases boldly after God's will for your life together.
We want to invite you to subscribe to our show wherever you watch or listen.
We are so glad you're here, and we pray that our discussion truly blesses you and your marriage.
Welcome to the Marriage After God podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another incredible episode of the Marriage After God podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Smith, and our mission is to inspire couples to pursue God's purpose for their marriage through powerful and thought-provoking conversations. Hit that like button and make sure to subscribe wherever you watch or listen so that you never miss an episode. Leave a review or a comment to join in the discussion, and visit shop.marriageaftergod.com for our marriage prayer journals and 30-day devotionals to grow closer to God and to each other. Today, I'm excited to welcome Ashton and Spencer Draper, authors of The Big Yellow House. We'll dive into their 12-year marriage, adopting their son Bismarck from Ghana, Ashton's health challenges, and how biblical counseling transformed their unity. Enjoy my conversation with Ashton and Spencer Draper. Spencer, Ashton, welcome to the Marriage After God podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you.
When I got your email a while ago, and I always try and vet who's, you know, I get a lot of people requesting, and I'm like, okay, who's this person? I've never heard of you before. I started looking at your story. I started looking at your book you wrote, and I just fell in love with adoption. So we're going to talk about adoption because it's a big part of your faith story and your journey and your marriage. But first and foremost, I just would love for you to just share who you are, background, marriage, some of your marriage story, and just so my audience can meet you guys for the first time.
Yeah. So I'm Ashton and this is Spencer. And we met when I was 18, maybe 17 is when we first met, but we got married young. I was almost 21. So I was just shy of 21 when we got married, and you were 22.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When we got married. So
that's exactly when we got married. 21
oh, yeah?
and 22. Yeah,
it was definitely my wife, something most people thought was too young, especially today, but we did. And here we are. So when we've been married for September, it'll be 12 years. And we've
That's
got
awesome.
Four kiddos, three biological kids, and then one adopted.
Awesome. Spencer, how'd you guys meet?
We met through a mutual friend at a youth conference in Cedarville, Ohio. So...
Awesome. Yeah. So
yeah,
my wife and I, we met, it wasn't a youth group, but it was kind of a youth group that turned into a church. And so we were going at the same time. We had same friend groups, but we had a similar story. I was 22 and she turned 21 just before our wedding. So mm-hmm. It was like, cause her birthday is December 31st. We got married on January 6th. So she had just turned 21. So it was exact same story. So were you both raised in Christian homes, or do you have – I always like to ask background questions on some of this stuff because it helps get a clear understanding of, like, your guys' story and how it evolved.
That's fair. I was basically born into the church and raised going to church and Sunday school. They even had that at the time, and Wednesday night service. And, yeah, so I've been in the church, went to a private Christian school throughout elementary school, middle school. So yeah, I've been heavily involved in the church scene for a while.
Yeah, and I'm similar. So I grew up in the church. Same story. We would have Wednesday night services, Friday night Bible study, you know, Sunday school, church service. So yeah, definitely a heavy influence in our home.
Awesome. So I understand that. So from reading some of your book and Ashton, you've had a desire from very young age for adoption, which is pretty much what your book is about. I know it's a lot about your marriage and all that, but where did that start and how early were you having this vision for adoption one day?
Yeah, I don't know exactly. It's hard to pinpoint because I just feel like it's always been there. But I do remember I was very young and a couple at our church brought home a little girl. She was not very old, from Haiti. And so I just think that maybe that's kind of where that seed was planted, because it probably would have been my first exposure. It would have definitely been my first exposure to international adoption and this interracial, you know, mixing of family. So I think that's probably kind of where it started, and then just kind of grew from there.
Awesome. So you saw it yourself. Someone else was going on that journey, and it kind of planted a seed in your heart.
Yeah.
What about it? I don't want to say it was attractive, but drew you to it.
I don't really know. And I think that's the thing where it's just like the Lord, like that's just where the Lord has called kind of my passion. And I think, and I think I even talk about it in my book a little bit, I think I had a romanticized view of what adoption really looks like, right? Like it just, it looks beautiful. Like it's just it is a picture of the gospel. And so I don't know if maybe that's kind of what drew me in as well. But I would just say it's just something that outside of like the Lord just putting that call in my heart, I don't really know.
Yeah, I feel like when like what you're talking about, just it being a picture of the gospel, I feel like there's certain archetypal things in general that God created that when we see them take place, we may not be able to put our finger on it, but it's like there's something beautiful about that, seeing a child being adopted. Like, wait, that child had no family and now it has a family, and it's beautiful. When you see, you know, reconciliation in marriage, you're like, oh, that's beautiful. When you see someone being saved, you know, or you know, they're in danger and someone saves them, you know, the hero story. We have all these movies, you know, that highlight these beautiful things in with human nature. And so I think, like what you're talking about, like it's hard to pinpoint, but there's something miraculous. There's something just deep down beautiful about it that we see. And I think adoption's amazing. We have friends that we support. They've adopted 7 children from China, all with special needs. We've been supporting them for years. And when I see their story, like it's not an easy story. It's not it's been a messy story. It's been a hard story. But when I look at that, I think that's the most beautiful, powerful thing I've ever seen. So when thinking about someone in ministry, I'm like, they are in one of the best ministries. They saved, not just saved, but they brought all these children in and given them a family, and they're part of their family now. And I just love that. Spencer, was this something in your heart? Adoption? Like, did you see that?
That same extent. Fortunately, this was a conversation pre-marriage and engagement and stuff. So I did know what I was signing up for at some point in time. I do like kids. I've been involved in kid ministries and stuff all growing up and in college and stuff. So I knew I liked kids. It wasn't like a crazy ask, but once we started having our own kids, it made it even more like it's just a matter of when we pull the trigger on going through with the adoption thing. So yeah,
I think that's wonderful that you guys talked about that pre-marriage. Was this while you're dating, or were you like just before dating?
It would have been closer. We were serious, but yeah. I don't know if it was engagement or post engagement or whatever, but yeah, it was definitely pre-marriage where she's like, just so you know, this will happen.
I love that. How'd that conversation go? You guys talking about children and what family looks like?
I mean, we always knew we wanted kids, so it wasn't a hard conversation. Not a matter of how many we wanted, you know, not really sure. So I just think the adoptions, he was just like, okay, you know, and then we'll cross that bridge when we get there, sort of thing. And because, you know, that was in the who knows how long in the future.
And for me too, like even though it wasn't something that like was super placed on my heart, I too kind of, like you're saying, I knew the archetypes of like God loves to rescue the lost or the vulnerable and different things like that. So I'm like, it is a beautiful picture of the gospel. And yeah, to not be a part of that would be a shame. So yeah.
That's beautiful. So Ashton, you are I don't know how to say it, professional sign linguagist. What do you call that?
I am a sign language interpreter. So yes.
Okay. Yeah. And then Spencer, what do you do?
I'm a planner at a factory at a little town down the road. So we manufacture like brass fluid connectors.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Hey, friends. Aaron Smith here. Just wanted to take a moment and share with you something really special. You know, as parents, we're always looking for ways to encourage our kids' faith journey. Recently, I picked up some amazing highlighters and Bible resources from Mr. Penn as a gift for my daughter. She's been diving deeper into scripture and wanting to highlight her favorite verses and passages and wanting to jot down notes. She absolutely loves them, and they don't bleed through those thin Bible pages. Mr. Penn is all about equipping Christian families with top-notch Bible journaling kits, beautiful journaling Bibles, no bleed pens and highlighters, Bible tabs, journals, and even school supplies for us parents. Started by Christian teachers in Louisiana, they've got over 100,000 five-star reviews on Amazon, which is amazing. I love how their products make studying God's Word fun and practical. And they even offer custom options for churches and conferences, plus a money-back guarantee if you're not thrilled. It's something I really love about them. Shop the best Bible journaling supplies on the market and fantastic gifts for the ladies in your life at MrPen.com. That's MRPEN.com. And guess what? Our audience gets a special discount. Use code MAG10, that's MAG10, at checkout and get 10% off your entire order. Check them out today. So I'd love to know about this journey. So you guys get married. It's been 12 years almost now. But in the first, you know, handful of years, you guys, you have three biological children?
We have three biological, yes.
How is that age range and gender?
Yeah, so our oldest is 8, and then it's a girl. And then our second is also a girl, and she is 7. And then we actually went out of birth order a little bit because our adopted son is 6. And then our biological son is 5.
So you adopted after the second?
We did have all three kids before we then adopted.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
We started the process before I was ever pregnant with our third, though. It just took so long that he had been born and several years old before we had the adoption finalized.
Awesome. What kind of things have you learned from having your biological children, because you had all three, and then the your adopted son? What have you been learning along that path of God's ministry for you guys in your parenting and adoption?
It's a really good question. No one has asked that one yet.
I can go first. Definitely, I like to try to learn. So anything that I say right now is not actually my own. It's me stealing other people's thoughts or whatever. So I think it's Paul Tripp who has a book called Parenting, and it just really hammers home the idea that, like, as much as I, the parent, may get my patience frustrated by my kids or their disobedience, that is almost the same reflection of, like, hey, I'm the kid and God's the father, and my disobedience and like how much patience God takes dealing with me. It's a very humbling reminder that, like, oh shoot, like, I need to treat my kids with love and patience and kindness, even when I feel like everything about it says, like, your feelings, like, you just want to blow up or whatever. It's a very humbling perspective shift that does, in my opinion, doesn't come from anything outside of having a biblical worldview. So, I think that's very helpful in my growth as a parent is, I can still discipline and I can still set the expectation that the kid goes against it or whatever. Like, I can still discipline and love, and it doesn't have to be an angry blow up or anything like that. So yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, but yeah, that's just a little snippet of what I got to share.
Ashton, how about you?
Yeah, I think as it relates to the difference between, like, biological and adoption, I don't think anyone can really prepare you for that difference, because it's something that people even are like, oh, just so you know, education classes, you learn, like, adoptive children may have issues with sleep. And we found that to be very true at first. And yet I still, like, we look back and we're like, man, we could have handled that better, because you naturally want to just treat them like you your child, right? But then you're like, man, we're pulling them from everything that they know. And so it's just trying to rethink, okay, where are they coming from? You know, or like, what is their possible perspective? What could be causing them to feel this way about this situation? So just kind of working different angles. But with that being said too, our adoption has been so like beautifully blessed. Like just having him here and integrating into our family has just been beyond what we could ever have asked for. He has done amazing.
Can I ask your son's name if you want to share it? You don't have to.
His name is Bismarck.
Bismarck. So how old was Bismarck when he was adopted?
He was, well, by the time he was legally adopted, he was 5. So we met him a couple weeks before he turned 5.
Yeah, he was in our care at the age of 4.
Okay, so you guys were starting, and then by the time he was officially adopted, he was 5. Yeah, and by 5 years old, they've already established almost a worldview. They have their life established. They have expectations and understandings, and that's a big deal. That transition, was it a hard transition, him coming to live with you and not being in Ghana and now being in the United States? I don't know where you guys live, but where do you guys live, by the way?
We're in Indiana.
Indiana. Okay, cool. I love Indiana. So going Indiana is much different from Ghana. So how was that transition for little Bismarck?
Yeah, sure. And for the most part, it's been about as ideal of a scenario as any adopted parent. And I'm probably doing a jinx right now and I need to knock on wood or something. But like for us, the process of adoption was the pain was very much the struggle. But as far as him himself, like, he was not struggling with a lot of the attachment things that you hear the horror stories about, or you almost expect, like you go into it prepared for eating, protectiveness, different things like that. Like he meshed with our kids super well. And I think that may have had a part to play, was we had kids literally age-wise all around him. Our biological son being basically the same age almost as him. And so all that, really translated really well into our family. And transitioning back to the States after living in Ghana for 6 months with Ashton, that still went as smooth as anyone could ask for, sleeping in his own bed from the second night on every night, like no night terrors. Like, I mean, I'm telling you, it's a huge blessing.
Wow. How much do you think that was contributed by your prayer?
A huge part of it. Yeah. And it helps too that he had 6 months with me more. I mean, all of us were there in Ghana, but I was there for 6 months, and he had 6 months to build some of that bond before just coming to the States.
Yeah, there's an element of like you wish that the adoption was like quick and you didn't have to live out of country for so long and you could just get them back home. But the ramifications of that could be a lot of the things that could cause like struggling with the attachment and all the trauma all at once and stuff. Yeah.
You know, quote unquote, blessing in disguise, like being forced to be there for 6 months allowed him 6 months of transition to probably the hardest part would be becoming part of your family, right? That transition of trusting you and seeing you as his, while in the comfort of his home country. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's some huge blessing there. I do got to ask, so fears that I've had, you know, my wife and I have discussed adoption here and there. We've had almost opportunities in the past to do, to adopt. Not that we're strongly looking into it, but there's been opportunities of babies that have come up. Like, hey, there's this mother and this situation, and it didn't happen, and that's okay. But we have 6 of our own. considerations that we've had is always age of the child being adopted, and how that's going to affect the current family unit and how we are. How did you walk with your children? Because like your oldest is 8. I'm sure the younger ones, it probably was a little bit, you know, what's going on, but they're learning it all as it happens.
Yeah.
But your 8-year-old, like I have an 8-year-old, and they're fully aware. Like they have their, and they're also the firstborn, and they have this like attachment of like, you know, they were with you first. And so how did you walk with your children through this process from start to finish? It's not finished yet, but start to, now you have Bismarck in your home, walking them through spiritually and emotionally and mentally to prepare them for bringing in Bismarck into your home.
Yeah. Well, I think it helps that in a sense, she kind of walked through it as it came as well, because she would have only been 3, I think, when we started the process. So
she was there for the whole thing. Yeah.
She was really there for the whole thing. You know, she was older when we finally got him in our care. But I do think she was just involved in the fundraisers. And, you know, so it was just always a conversation within the family about what was going on.
Okay. So you feel like they were there for the process the whole time and growing up with the process, essentially. So it wasn't that shocking.
And she's also like, she has like this really big heart. So I think that she really just embraced, like, we took them to the orphanage with us, the older two, and they just ate that up. They just loved that. They loved getting to see the babies and play with the toddlers. And so I think it just, a little bit of her heart might even go in that direction in the future, just because she just has such a caring, big heart for others.
Spencer, have you seen a like you're talking about the heart of your children, have you seen a big shift in your kids in how they view the world and people because of your guys' journey of adoption?
That's a good question. I like to think that they have better awareness of like the outcast, so to speak, of like when you're in it's easy to be in a group with all your friends and it turn into a clique of sorts or whatever, but to be on the lookout for those who maybe aren't fitting into a certain group of individuals and going out of your way to include them or at least engage with them at some level. I know our oldest two definitely try to shoot for that. The boys, I don't know. They're not there yet. They're 5 and 6. They're too busy wrestling right now. Yeah. They'll get there though, hopefully.
I think to speak to that a little bit, our 7-year-old just, I think yesterday, the day before, she said, "Mom, when you helped that guy, did you pull over the side of the road?" And so she was referring to a time when we were in Ghana. And there was the same guy on the street corner that we passed who didn't have legs. And we passed him every day. And so we took the kids to the store with us. We bought some things for him, and we ended up just meeting him and praying for him and giving him some of the items that he might need. And she was referring to that moment. I think she was trying to figure out just a little bit like what was that? Like, what was that about? And so I'll be curious as they get older and they start to express some of these things and maybe ask more questions to see what kind of role it has played in their life.
That's awesome. Yeah, I would imagine it's going to have a huge impact on their life, just the way you guys have, you know, loved another child as your own and brought him in and incorporated into the home. And has there been any friction with the children with the bring him in? Or like you said, I mean, they were kind of growing up in this whole thing, but I would imagine it's still a huge transition. Has there been friction? How have you guys dealt with that?
Outside of like, I think your typical sibling squabbles, I wouldn't say that there's been any friction that's been as a result of this that I think wouldn't have been there with, you know, any sibling.
That's awesome. It sounds like you guys have a really good just situation and, like you said, a ideal of bringing.
And maybe it'll hit. It's probably going to hit later or something to make up for
it. You never know. Yeah. I think that's amazing. And so adoption, it took, so you said he was three. So it's been, it took like what, 3 years? How long did it, from the start of your journey to getting Bismarck in your, you know, in your home?
So from the time that we like signed with an agency to bringing him home was about 5 years, almost 5 years exactly.
Wow. Yeah. But why does it take so long?
Well, COVID was a big part of that because that stalled.
You did things. This right in 2019-ish.
Yeah. So that was, we had signed a contract in 2019, COVID hit 2020. And so that put a pause, probably a year and a half pause, just because of everybody being inside. And to make kids adoptable, social workers have to be going out into the field and doing a lot of work. Yeah. And that just wasn't happening at all. So that was a huge part. But the other part is that Ghana had, they just became Hague accredited. So meaning now they have all these laws to follow for the safety of families and children that they never had to follow before. So we were a part of a pilot program. So we really had no idea what we were getting ourselves into when we decided that we would adopt from Ghana. And so I think that was just a lot of growing pains for the agency, for the country, and the whole program.
So real easy and fast. No,
yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly.
So it could have, without COVID in that year and a half, you know, 2.5, 3 years would have been probably the normal.
Mm-hmm. And I think kind of back to an earlier point you said, we wanted to adopt a kid that was at least younger than our oldest. And so because the process drug out so long, we actually were then able to expand our age range up a couple years, which then allowed us to get matched faster.
Because you had your like specific age range, but then you were able to make that, you know, between these ages rather than this specific age. Yep. See, it sounds like God's timing is better than ours, right?
Yeah.
You know? Time, money. So how much, if I might ask, did it end up costing? Because this is a big pinch point for people wanting to adopt. Yeah. Is the cost? What was the total? And can you give me some of the breakdowns? The reason I'm asking is because I'm sure there's a lot of people that desire this, mm-hmm. and it's good to know like what it could cost, what it could be, and why to have that as part of the prayer process.
Yeah, I think. Before I even give the number, though, like, I don't ever want it to deter someone. Because you hear the number, and instantly I think you'd be like, we don't have that money. But we don't have that money. And we didn't have that money. And so I think from start to finish, and this includes travel, time in country, you know, rent, all of that, was close to probably $80,000. But there are a lot of grants. We got a lot of grants that we applied for. So that was a huge blessing. We did 2 large fundraisers, like actual events, and then some smaller ones in between. And so, I mean, the Lord provided every penny. I mean, I homeschool, so I work very part-time. And so we didn't have the money. And so I just wanted to encourage people too, because the Lord will totally provide.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. There's been time. So my wife and I did missionary work, and we had to raise quite a bit of money for that. There's been plenty of times in my life that I don't have what's necessary, and so my wife and I've got to prayerfully seek that out. And God is faithful, and He is. So exactly what you're saying is my question wasn't to discourage anyone; it's to give a realistic understanding, but also to begin that faith process of like, well, if that's something we want to pursue, we got to trust God in the whole process, which is exactly what God wants us to do anyway. You know, the Bible tells us that anything that's not done in faith is sin. Like we need to be pursuing all of these things in faith, mm-hmm. in the God who knows the outcomes of these things and knows everything. So I love that. What were some of the ways that you guys fundraised? So not only grants, but you did fundraisers also, right?
We had a longstanding one with Gobina Coffee. I don't know if you've heard of Gobina, but they're an organization that the money goes towards, like, anybody can go order coffee and it goes to orphans. So they use money for orphans worldwide. But they actually have accounts that you can set up. And anytime people order coffee, you get 50% of their purchase that goes directly to your adoption account.
Oh, that's really cool.
And that one, and we love their coffee. It's our favorite coffee.
It's very good.
It's very good. Too. You can get, like, Guatemalan. You can get it from all over.
Can I, what's it called again? I'm going to write it down.
Gobina, G-O-B-E-N-A.
Gobina. I'll look that up. Cool.
We did that. We had that open the whole time. You know, so every time a family needed coffee, they'd just go order the coffee and they would go to our account. We did two events. So one was, like, we had music. We did, like, a pancake breakfast. We had a silent auction.
That fundraiser is a really cool testament to, like, the church in this community, because, like, mm-hmm. a church that we don't go to hosted. And a lot of people, like, serve the pancake breakfast and do the prep work. And it was, like, on a church that we have ties to, but we aren't members of. And then, like, people, friends and family and other people that we just know, like, we're donating items towards it. So, I mean, it was the adoption process leading up from a fundraiser standpoint was really encouraging from, like, our town has quite a few churches, and a lot of them were involved in some way, shape, or form with just being on board with helping support an adoption.
And what's this is always a main theme, especially in, I mean, for believers, is coming back to fellowship and community and how the church is to operate. And I love that. So, dollar amount aside, because that's a means to an end. Like, it's a tool that God gives us, money. It's a tool, just like anything, that we're to be stewards over. But I love that the church may not be one that you were a member of, but you are a member of the global church, the universal church. And to know that many people took part in this adoption process, that you have your son because of the church, not only the church, but because of Christ's church, that loved you and him more than their dollars, more than their items that they donated, more than their time that they donated, which is such a beautiful testimony to how the church is to operate, is that we're to support each other and bear the burden for each other and strengthen that which is weak, and you know, the things that are strong need to be humbled and the things that are weak need to be raised up. And I just love the picture that the Bible gives us of how the body's to work. And so, yeah, money, dollar amount aside, it's just awesome that the church participated in this process with you guys, so that when you look at your son, you know that he's here because of what God had done, not because of what you did, but what he's done. And I just love that. So raising money, time, COVID, all the quote unquote, hard things. And on top of that, it wasn't all easy, right? There was, you would think that would be enough. It's like, okay, this is a lot of stuff. Tell me, Spencer and Ashton, what else was going on in this season that just added to the level of intensity of this process?
Yeah, in 2020, my health started to decline. And we were chasing doctor's appointments and doing the tests and doing the things. And it's been 5 years and we still have an answer. And so my health really took a hit. But at the same time, then our marriage took a hit. And it was really just a surfacing problem of what was already there. But when you put in all these external factors to add stressors onto it, it really shows you how strong or not strong your marriage was to begin with. And so our marriage was in a really bad place for a couple of years. I would say probably for a couple of years of that.
Spencer, I just got to ask, not that it's, I'm not going to blame it on you. I'm just asking you to give your perspective. Why? What was going on? You said that these are things that were underlying. They might've already been there. What was going on that was, what was this issue in the marriage that was going on?
Yeah. It definitely, a majority of it did, I think, tie back to the health stuff that spiraled and we weren't finding answers for. And kind of as time went on, the question in my mind surfaced, like, do we still go through with adoption? Like, we've started the process, but we're not paired with anyone. Like, we still have an out, essentially. We have three kids, and that was definitely a tension for me, was like, how do you even navigate this? Like, Ashton, like, anytime we would talk about it, Ashton's like, no, adoption is still something I want to do. Like, God will provide. And I'm like thinking the like, how do I take care of my family? Like, we don't even know what all is the root cause of this health stuff. And do we add another variable to the equation by continuing with adoption? So those are all the thoughts that Satan, like, just keeps hammering away in the back of my mind. And it's not, I wouldn't even say that it's a bad thing, but I think he probably picked up that, like, ooh, this is causing a wedge. Like, let me keep this going. So that was definitely some of the thoughts and the biggest tension point that we were wrestling with.
So the adoption, it's you're kind of in the beginning stages of it. There's lots of question marks there. Your health, can you share, like, what was going on health wise, or like, what do you, yeah. I mean, you don't have answers, but what's going on?
Yeah, just kind of, you know, I had some hemorrhaging after I had our last biological child, and so we thought, you know, I had several surgeries after that, and then, you know, I had COVID, as did, you know, many people, and then I had kidney stones. And I had two surgeries for that. So it was like all these things that seemed very acute in nature. But then as those things resolved, like, I was just dealing with a lot of symptoms that, like, started out with a lot of nausea, and I was losing a lot of weight, and I was really unhealthy. I couldn't eat. And so then I had another surgery, and my symptoms kind of have morphed and changed. And so it's, some days it's dizziness. I have a lot of fatigue. I still get abdominal pain and nausea. And I could probably list like 40 to 50 symptoms that happen at any given time.
And you're still dealing with this?
Yeah. I still deal with this. Yeah.
Oh man, I'm going to pray for healing for you before we're done with this conversation.
Yeah. I appreciate it. And I don't think either of us knew how to handle it. And I think we didn't know how to talk about it. Like, we didn't know how to talk about how either of us were even feeling about it. Like, he was afraid to approach me about the adoption. And internally, I also knew that the adoption maybe shouldn't happen, but I just wasn't willing to let it go. But I didn't even, neither of us felt safe to even talk about it. And so it just drove a wedge between us that much further. And it was just really unhealthy.
So your health stuff that was going on, this was the main stressor, main pinch point with you guys relationally?
Yeah, I would say so. And I mean, I think it just exposed, like she was saying, some of our communication wasn't where it should have been. Like, for example, like, I did not feel like I could express that I was having doubts about going through with the adoption, because I knew she was, like, still 1,000% gung-ho on doing it, regardless of the appointments and surgeries and different things she's gone through. So I didn't even feel like I knew how to handle that. And that's part of just my personality and my immaturity and just things that we weren't prepared for from a communication standpoint in our marriage.
Was there any anger or bitterness building from, you know, what she was going through and you not, I don't know, maybe not knowing how to help or knowing what role you play? I don't know how to say that, but.
Yeah, no, sure. There was definitely angerness and bitterness that I felt. I almost actually, it almost got to the point of apathy. And they even say that, like, apathy is worse than having anger, because anger almost shows you still care about something, but apathy is like you're just along for the ride, wherever that takes you. And as a leader of the family, that's not a good position to be in.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people think hate is the opposite of love, but the opposite of love is actually apathy. You know, it's when you don't have any care or at all. So you were noticing that. Did you have to help a lot in the heavier seasons of health issues, like take time off, or like were those kinds of the things that were adding to all of this?
Not as much as I felt like I should have. I felt like she was like, I'm going to power through it. Like, as much as I don't want to get out of bed every day because of how I'm feeling, like, I can't stay in bed. I have three kids. And I didn't know what to do with that either, because I'm like, should I be signed up for something and able to help you out, like FMLA type stuff, to where I can assist if you're having a down day? But I also, we just didn't really have good communication on what that should look like and how I can help out on the day to day. And so she just kept powering through it when she probably should have had help. And I kind of didn't step up and initiate in some ways that I probably should have.
That's awesome that you recognize these things in hindsight. Of course, it's like how God uses our situations to mature us and grow us. So you guys are pursuing this adoption. You've just had your third child. Ashton, you're starting to go through serious medical issues and no answers, which is also on its own level of like a spiritual frustration of like, there's this thing and we don't know what it is. We don't know when it's going to stop. You know, is it forever? Adding all of this weight to your marriage. I want to, like, in the book you mentioned even like that you guys got to a point of considering divorce on some level. What was the trigger point for that? But then more importantly, what was the thing that God did that changed all that perspective? I know that the details haven't changed necessarily, but the perspectives have and the hearts have. So what got you to that point? And then what was that changing factor? What was the thing that changed?
I think that's my favorite part of all of it, is what got us to the change. Just because you can really see how God worked and his time, like how perfect his timing is. So I think what got us to that point was like, we would sit down and try to have a conversation about anything. I mean, it could be anything. And we felt completely opposite on every single thing. So we were like, okay, well, I'm holding you back. And you're holding me back. We both like we should be doing these things. And this is how the enemy works. We were like, the Lord is calling us to like pursue different things. And it's like, no, he's calling us to our marriage first, right? And then figuring out. But we really felt that. We were like, I'm being called to do this and you're being called to do that. So maybe we just, you know, get divorced. But he took a college class. I don't know if you read that part of the book yet, but I don't know how many years ago it was. He didn't finish college. He had like one semester left. And at the time, I was mad that he never finished. And then 10 years later, he has to finish in order to get this certain position he's at work. And because of that, he then had to take a new elective, right? One of your credits didn't transfer. So he had to take an elective that was not there before. And it was marriage and family counseling. Is that right? And he met his professor, is also a counselor. And we had done counseling prior, but it just wasn't what we needed. And that was a turning point, seeing this specific counselor.
So you saw this counselor and they focused on, as you say in the book, emotions. And
that was the first one.
That was the first one. Oh, okay. You're talking about a different one. So,
yeah.
Okay. I'm mixing up the two.
Yeah.
So you saw a second one.
Well,
and no, that was the turning point.
We saw four.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So, The first one was very, like, it was under the name of, like, Christian counseling, but it was very much like, let's talk about how to fight fair and, like, just very, like, no, I'm not going to say bad things, right? But we needed spiritual depth. Like, we really needed spiritual depth. And then we saw a couple within a company, and they focus on emotions, how to talk through what each other is doing and how it makes us feel. I think it was an okay starting point. I think it helped us to start to talk about some things, but I still never felt the depth. Nothing pivoting, it felt like. And so then we switched counselors within the same organization and only saw him a couple of times. And similarly, I think he was more like a psychotherapy. Is that right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like more like psychotherapy.
Yeah, so
you would sit and talk all day long about your life and he'll keep you there. You will just talk about what brought you to where you are, why you are who you are. And that's where you kind of stay. And then you talk about how that made you feel. And again, it wasn't getting to the heart of any of it. So the fourth counselor finally was the turning point because he is just like straight from the Bible.
Yeah, this is going to be terrible, but like if you don't embrace a biblical worldview or like agree that like the Bible is truth and stuff, like he doesn't even really take you on because he doesn't have a framework within which to move. Like he doesn't even view himself as the counselor. Like he's just, reframing everything else the counselor, capital C, has to offer. So
I don't do marriage counseling, but anytime I've counseled marriages, so because they're different, I'm not a counselor, but I've definitely been brought into marriages as I've needed for myself before. But I always start with, I'm like, do you both agree that the Bible is truth? Like, always like, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you agree that what it says is right? Yeah, okay, like cool, that's where we're gonna start. Because if we don't agree on that, like exactly like what he said, like we're not even gonna, there's nowhere to go. Because if you don't believe this, then I'm not gonna be able to help you. But I do have to ask, well, first of all, it sounds like you found the right one to help you guys. Mm-hmm. Because he pointed you back to the Word of God. What was it? If you were to sum up, I don't know how many times you saw this person, but if you were to sum up your meetings with this gentleman and what he pointed you to, what was it that just changed the whole perspective on your marriage?
That's a good one. I feel like you're really good at this.
No. I don't know if I can pull the trigger on just one thing. it's
rambling. It might come out.
I know, right? No, it's the engagement, and this is coming from someone who's grown up in the church, right? Like I know the Bible and I've agreed as truth my whole life, but like, there was something about putting to the test, like, oh, so you guys are going to talk about divorce and like, that's going to be an okay thing. And yet you guys walk away and call yourself like a believer. Like, honestly, he almost puts
really challenging you.
Very strong challenge to like, I don't know how you, there's a couple outs to that in scripture, but like, other than that, like how are you going to justify that to your kids one day? Like, he didn't start with that line, but that is like, ooh, yeah, you're right. How do you go about pulling that off?
That's really good. Just challenging your, so you claim faith in Christ. You claim to believe what his word says is true. And yet you're willing to adopt these lies. You're like, oh, you know, this is an option. This is a viable option. And he's like, not if you're a believer, it's not. Because
two examples that like I can think of specifically that I feel like when he said them, I was like, oh, like, wow. And one of them was like, he was asking us very honestly, he's like, what's your threshold of grace? Like, where does forgiveness end? Is it like he cheats once and then you're done forgiving? She cheats 10 times and you're done forgiving? Or maybe he doesn't cheat, but like he does something like, what's your threshold of grace? And then he points us back to Jesus, right? Where he's like, there is no threshold of grace. Like, and that doesn't mean abuse, right? He's like, and I understand. Mm-hmm. He's like, I know your guys' hearts. I don't think either of you want to abuse the grace that you're, you're sharing. And so just like that challenge of like, man, Jesus forgives every single thing. And so just challenging us to be more like him in that regard. And then as it pertains to me specifically, like he said this a couple of times, I'm a very passionate person. And he's, you know, he's like, you have a passion to like move to Africa for 6 months. Like you were there by yourself. You adopted a child, you know, but like, where's that passion for your marriage? Right? Like you're, and I think just, he just said, he's like, you're willing to like part the sea, but you're not willing to like just get the cup of water. And so he was just trying to get my heart to focus on, this is all part of the Bible, right? Like you pursuing adoption is great and biblical and that's fine, but pursuing your marriage is also a part of that.
I love that he pointed you guys back to not saying like, hey, like stop this other good thing.
Right.
But make sure this first good thing is well. Yeah. Because like that's what God wants, this order of, you know, our focus on him, yep. our focus on our spouse, our focus on our children, and then, you know, it's this centrifugal, not centrifugal, it's the concentric circles going out. And pointing you back to that, those truths. So your passion, by the way, I think I love the word passion, so funny because it essentially means suffering.
And that's great.
Yeah. It's the things that we love so much, we're willing to suffer for right. it. Like the movie, The Passion of the Christ, it was the suffering of Christ on the cross. He was willing to go to the cross for his bride. Right. And it's exactly how God got a hold of my heart. That same question he asks you is like, what's your threshold of grace? Like, is there anything that you're willing to, that you think you're righteous enough to not forgive as if we somehow are better than Jesus and Jesus forgives all. And he, you know, the Lord asked me, he's like, you know, what has your wife done that, you know, is worse than you've done to me? And yet I've sent my only son, Jesus, to die for you. And it's a game changer in thought. It doesn't mean like every day I'm constantly thinking about that. I mess up as a husband and I make mistakes and I get angry and I'm short and I withhold forgiveness at times. But that is a big deal. Spencer, did you have a similar like moment of like, oh, like I need to forgive better. I need to have more grace and patience with Ashton.
Yeah. I mean, definitely there's no, there is no limit to the improvement on which I can get better at that.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah for sure.
Forever going deeper.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I don't have one specific like aha moment on that, but
yeah,
the methodical going, hearing that over and over again. And yeah, I mean, Tim Keller has a really good book that actually our counselor recommended called Forgive. And it's very similar, like the idea that, you know what, someone still pays a price. A lot of times we think of forgiveness as like forgive and forget type thing, but like,
yeah,
no, someone broke the lamp. If you're going to forgive them, guess what? You still have to replace the lamp type thinking. It's like, yep. Ooh, dang. Like, yeah, I'm really, when I forgive, signing up for still dealing with the aftermath of whatever the messiness was.
Yeah. Something that's really awesome about not just your story, but anyone who's going through adoption, I would imagine, I know you had these moments of, should we stop this process? But I would imagine you probably both at some point came to the conclusion like, well, no, it's not just this process, that's this child that is ours and we are waiting in faith for, that there was a belief almost just like pregnancy. Like you came together, you love each other. There's a baby that's created, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have this 10 months of waiting while this baby's being created. Adoption, similarly, the created portion is you guys coming together and agreeing together, like we want to adopt a child. And so the conception of the belief, and even though you may not know who the child is yet, or the name of the child, very just like as our baby's growing, we don't know this child yet. And if you are like me and my wife, sometimes not wanting to find a gender, you're like, we don't know at all who this is.
You did that for all six?
I was going to say, after six, no, you got everything. Anyways,
we've done it twice. We've done it twice. My wife never wants to, she always wants to know. And every single time, I'm like, let's just wait. And she's like, no, I'm not doing it. But she agreed twice. And so twice we were surprised, which was awesome because both times they were good surprises. I mean, they're also good surprises. But yeah, so you have this process. And what I was thinking in that, you know, you're going through these hardships, you're going through, you know, sickness and marriage struggles. And at no point did you guys think, this is going to sound weird, but like, at no point did you think like, oh, we should, like the children are in the way of all of this. Mm-hmm. No, they're your children.
Yeah.
Like they're there. You have them, you birthed them, they're yours. And similarly, this child that you haven't yet fully adopted, that belief, that conception that you guys had together, like that doesn't get sacrificed just because you're in this season. Like they're your child. You may not know them yet. You may not know their name yet. And so you guys continued on in that process, despite the struggles of marriage and life and health. And I just think that's a really beautiful testimony to perseverance and faith and hope and the things that I think we're called to as believers. So would you like to speak to that a little bit as we come to a close? I said a lot. Sorry.
That's okay.
I did sometimes.
I think, I mean, what I would say, and I speak to it in my book is, I don't even think that like if we had stopped it, it would have been sin in and of itself, right? I think that, you know, our marriage has to be in a better place before we can bring another child into our home or, you know.
We're looking for people who have been blessed by this free podcast and our free daily marriage prayer emails and who want to help be a blessing to others. Creating and hosting this podcast and sending out our daily emails do incur a financial cost. And we want to invite you to join our faithful patron team to help financially support these resources so that they can remain free for all who need them. Please join our patron team today and become one of the faithful financial supporters who desires to help bless thousands of marriages around the world. Your support will help us pay for the creation, hosting, and promotion of our podcast and daily emails. Thank you, and we hope to see you become a Marriage After God patron.
Whatever that looked like. But what I will say, though, is that like because we persevered, we now have such a beautiful blessing out of it. And the Lord used all of it for our better. I mean, I think we can look back on the season and just see how much we've grown, how much God has shown up. And then we can see, you know, Bismarck's life is just like a true testament to like the blessing of that perseverance.
That's, I love it. I love the story. So for adoption may not be everyone's story, may not be a part of everyone's, you know, calling in this life. I think more people should, for sure. More believers should. What would your encouragement be to those who it is their story or may be their story in the future? What's one bit of encouragement to get them praying in the right direction? Start with you, Spencer. Yeah. Putting me on the spot.
Absolutely. I know. There's so many thoughts going through my mind right now. I mean, you already hit on it. Like, God is the one going to orchestrate stuff. So be praying about it, whether it's the finances side of it, the timing of it, whatever it is. But, like, the spiritual side of it, you have to be in touch very regularly on the topic of it. It's or else you're not gonna be ready. If you're not there spiritually, I mean, you might be able to pull the trigger on it from a physical sense and think that it's all gonna be honky dory, but really at the end of the day, you're gonna run into some stuff, I'm sure, and not be prepared for it. So yeah, the prep and prayer is the huge part I would suggest. Recommend.
Good. Ashton?
The passionate part of me is just like, just do it. Like, just go for it. Like,
just do it.
Yeah. It's so worth it. And you're right. I think preparing as much as you can, but And there's just so much you can't prepare for. We never prepared for me to be in Africa for 6 months. Like, so yeah. Even if your hearts are in the right place, I mean, that's a obviously a huge, great starting point. Like, it doesn't mean you're not going to come up against roadblocks, that the Lord's just going to work through. And so I would just encourage anyone who's praying about it to just, yeah, reach out to agencies, just start asking questions, even if they're not ready to like jump in, and then just see, because they're honestly, even just starting like asking questions is huge, because you realize, well, I might not be a good candidate for that country or that country or that country or that. Like, we stopped, we paused when we first started because we weren't a good candidate for any country. And so just starting the conversation, I think, is just a really good starting point.
That's great. I would add to all of that is, you know, based off of what you guys were sharing, is also just make sure your marriage is on point. Doesn't mean perfect, but like that you guys are communicating and together and in oneness and walking together and in the Word of God together and prayer and just strengthening your marriage so that when God puts it on your heart or when the timing's right or, you know, whatever the circumstances, that you're ready together. So, and you're going to go through trials along the way. I think your next book, first of all, your book's called The Yellow, what is it called?
Big Yellow House. Big Yellow House.
I did want to ask, why is it called The Big Yellow House?
Because whenever family, like we'd have family come over and visit while we were in Ghana, and then they'd go home, or like they would leave and take one of the siblings or two of the siblings home with them, and Bismarck couldn't go. And so we just, our house is big and it's yellow, our house here in the States. So we're like, they're going to Big Yellow House, and we're going to go to Big Yellow House soon. And so we just coined Big Yellow House, and that's where it's
so going. it was like a thing to look forward to for Bismarck.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Okay. My last thing, I think your next book should be a practical guide to fundraising for adoption.
Hey, there are a lot of options.
Yeah. You walked through that, and I think that'd be really cool, because I'm sure there's a lot of people that are desiring to adopt that are like, where do I start on raising the funds?
You better watch it. She's going to go, you know, I think we need to do a couple more before I can write a book like that.
Yeah. A few more fundraisers.
That's amazing. Well, I really appreciate you guys. Would you just share where people can find your book? And again, say the title of the book again. And I'd just love everyone to pick up a copy of this just to hear your story and be inspired by it.
Yeah. So I actually have a copy here, so that way people are watching it. But it's Big Yellow House. And then I have a journal as well that goes with it. But it basically takes questions from each chapter and goes deeper and just allows people to journal thoughts and give challenges and prayer ideas and things like that. So Amazon, find the book on Amazon, find the journal on Amazon. And I have like a Facebook page. I'm not the best at using it, but I do have like a Ashton Draper Big Yellow House Facebook page if anyone wants to follow along.
Awesome. I'll make sure to put the links in the show notes. Spencer, Ashton, thank you so much for sharing your story and your testimony. And I just love that, your family is serving God by growing. That's a big thing, you know.
Yeah,
your adoption story is amazing. So I really appreciate your time. God bless you guys.
Thank you for having us on.
Yeah, thank you.